sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome to the Steve Jones Show on this Thursday afternoon. I'll be here between now and 5 o'clock. Then Bill O'Brien joins me at 6:05 this evening from Damon's and State College on the Penn State Football Show. And that'll be 6:05 to 7 tonight as we talk with the head football coach of the Nittany Lions right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. But on a Thursday, that means we are sponsored by our good friend Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Give Rick a call at 800-609-9484. That's 800-609-9484. You always go online to rewfinancial.com. We're the beautiful Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. And don't forget about Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And based by all the Kias I see driving around the beautiful Susquehanna Valley, you are not forgetting about Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And our Let It Be Solar hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. And the Let It Be Solar hotline, powered by Let It Be Solar, go to LetItBeSolar.com. And later on the Let It Be Solar hotline, we'll be talking with Harry Donahue. He's the longtime play-by-play voice of the Temple Owls. Be great to have my old friend Harry Donahue on the show at 3:35. And then Matt Falcone from ESPN.com, who follows Notre Dame football, he'll join us at 4:05 this afternoon, and we'll hear from Matt, get his thoughts on Notre Dame, where they are right now, heading into a showdown weekend with the Wolverines of Michigan in South Bend, and also on the move eventually to the ACC in every sport but football. So a big day coming up here today. And don't forget Joe Susan on the show tomorrow as well to talk about Bucknell's football weekend. All that and more coming up. But first of all, we go above the noise. Here is Dan Patrick.
I'm sure you've browsed the web from time to time looking for a new or used vehicle and came across a few user-unfriendly websites. Kind of wasteful, right? It's time you could have been spending browsing the inventory and services you will always find at sunburymotors.com. Kia, Hyundai, Ford, Lincoln, new and quality used. There's a great selection and the best prices around. Their Black Book service takes the guesswork out of trading your car, and you can find out how much your car is worth with one click of the mouse. If you're looking for a commercial vehicle, Sunbury Motor Company has them, and you can browse online and take your time learning about Sunbury Motor Company's tire rewards, service department, parts, body shop, and much more. It's user-friendly and then some when you visit sunburymotors.com to see all their new and used inventory. Be sure to visit the North 4th Street Auto Plaza in Sunbury or Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Welcome. Great to have you with us. On this Thursday afternoon, as we're brought to you by our good friends at Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. You can always give Rick a call anytime at 800-609-9484 or visit online at rewfinancial.com. Matt Fortuna, ESPN.com, joins us at 3:35 to talk about the state of Notre Dame football. He is the blogger for ESPN.com. And then we'll be joined by Harry Donahue, the play-by-play voice of Temple football at 4:05. That is today's schedule. Now we turn over to the TMZ portion of the show.
Oh, I did a little bit of research, and I thought you'd be proud. No. I thought you would be proud. Yesterday we were talking about the replacement officials, which, by the way, is our poll question today. What do you think of the replacement officials? Good job, bad job, or undecided? But here's what I found. The average number of penalties per game is down from 15.2 to 14.7. Not much, but a little bit. On player safety calls, roughing the passer, unnecessary roughness, hitting a defenseless receiver, face mask, horse collar, they're nearly even. 75 at this time last year, 74 this time around. So it's almost dead even.
Right, but it depends on the crew. Ron Winters' crew calls more penalties in a game per game than Mike Carey's crew does. So it's always dependent on the crew. And you can look that one up. But the average penalty, number of penalties for that Ron, I think Ron Winters was number one over a five-year span, and consistent was number one in each of the 5 years, of penalties called in a game. Just, I mean, a lot of it depends on the crew.
Well, what do you think has been the most discussed penalty that the replacement officials have been calling? I mean, as far as the fan base is concerned.
I'm not sure about that. I think people think they're missing things.
See, I've heard a lot of people complaining about pass interference not being called defensive pass interference.
I think that, first of all, the NFL's pass interference rule is ridiculous. College has a better rule. I mean, look, we're stuck. It's third and 25. I just throw the ball up 40, 50 yards. And, oh, look at that. First down.
Yeah, but I like the NFL pass interference rule. I really don't like the college one.
15-yard penalty. Guess what?
Oh, listen,
if I'm
a cornerback and I'm getting beaten on a 50-yard pass play, I'm going to interfere.
Guess what? You know, you want to know why when the ball's hit to the shortstop and he flips to the second baseman for one and the second baseman throws the ball away, and even though there's no advance by the runner at first, why there's not an error on the play?
Why?
Because you can't assume a double play. That's why. The error is only given if the runner on first were to advance.
So you're saying you can't assume he's going to catch the ball.
You are assuming the dude's catching the ball. Really? Really?
Well, in the NFL, they're going to catch the ball a lot more often than they would at the college or high school level. You could safely say that.
No, I can't safely say that.
Still, if I'm in college, if I'm a college cornerback and I'm getting beat by a few yards and I know I'm not going to be able to make a play, I would much rather get a pass interference play and 15 yards and automatic first down than give up a touchdown.
But you know what's weird about what you just said?
What? That I'm a cornerback?
No, it never happens. No.
Really?
Pick out the games.
Well, I mean, can you ever say that he did that on purpose?
Pick me a game where you see that it is obvious they took the 15-yard penalty instead of where? Which game? I
can't say that I've seen any.
I thought when the rule came out, the same thing you did. I get beat, I drag him down.
I've seen it in high school, I can tell you that.
Right? But in college, you don't see it. Pass interference penalties in college are the same as they are in the pros. You go downfield, there's jousting, hand fighting at the wrong time, pass interference.
I mean, I've known high school coaches that have taught their cornerbacks to do that.
I understand that. And I thought when this rule was put forward, and this rule is almost 30 years old now, okay, that exactly what you talked about would be the scenario. Player gets beat, player grabs shirt, player pulls down player, rather have a 15-yard penalty than have him catch and go for a touchdown. I thought that would become the norm in the game. And what's interesting is it isn't even remotely the norm in the game, in the college game. It's not even remotely the norm.
Yeah, that does surprise me, though, that it doesn't happen as much as I thought it would.
I don't see it. I mean, I've been doing games for a long time. I can tell you right now, I haven't called one play yet where I thought it was deliberate pass interference to prevent a 15-yard penalty. Not once. And I thought it would be the norm when the rule came out.
Yeah, I'm surprised by that. I really am. Well,
it doesn't happen, and I think the NFL rule is ridiculous. I'm just going to chuck it downfield 6 yards, and hey, look at that. We got a free 52 yards. Really? Really?
Well, do you think maybe that's why you don't see the pass interference call on a Hail Mary? Because there's always pass interference on one of those plays. I mean, to say that there's not pass interference, you're crazy.
Yeah,
every time they chuck one up for grabs like that, everybody's bouncing all over the place.
But it just doesn't, you know, the NFL rule doesn't make any sense. It just doesn't make any sense to me. You're assuming the play is going to be complete. I'm assuming that he can defend it or the ball's thrown, to, you know, they can actually make the catch. Some of those balls are overthrown, for goodness sakes.
Well, I think it has to be catchable, though. I mean, was it, at one point, the rule was the ball had to be catchable.
Another judgment call.
I get that.
Another judgment call.
I know, and I'm usually against that. I know. I know I contradict myself there, but.
No, I think the NFL, the college rule is better, and college replay is better.
But I think
throw it down, this throw it downfield and hopefully get bailed out by a pass interference call is ridiculous.
But don't you think sometimes in this situation it's rather obvious whether the ball is going to be catchable or not? I mean, if it's 30 yards downfield or 15 yards ahead of the further downfield than the receiver, that's pretty obvious that it's not catchable. If it's 5 yards away, then I think you give the receiver the benefit of the doubt on the interference the way it's set up.
It doesn't matter. Make it a 15-yard penalty.
I'll compromise. We'll make it 25.
No, make it a 15-yard penalty.
Well, the reason I brought it up is because that's been the big topic, has been there haven't been enough defensive pass interference calls and illegal contact.
Oh, of course there haven't been, because that's how the majority of terrible offenses get yards.
But it's actually not much different. 48-51 from last year. So they've called it 48 times this year, 51 times in the same amount of games last year.
And you have to remember, for college officials, and these are Division III college officials,
right?
They do not deal with a 5-yard cushion.
That's true.
So this is an all-new rule for them. I've talked to Stan Hickson and to Bill O'Brien about the adjustment they've had to make as coaches back to the college level from the NFL of getting used to the fact that a receiver can be ridden downfield until the ball's released. And they had to make it a little bit of an adjustment as to how you coach it and so forth.
Well, are you ready for my favorite stat that I found? Instant replays reviews are up, way up, by about 16. The percentage of reversals, though, down. 23 this year out of 62, as opposed to 21 out of 46 in 2001. So percentage-wise, the reversals have been down. They've actually, in that way, when they review a play, have been correct more often than the regular officials.
Are those challenges or are those touchdown turnover?
This is replay in general. This is all replays. Again,
but then you don't know, because now every turnover is also replayed.
Well, that's true, but also every touchdown is replayed this year. So there's been six. There's actually been more replays.
Touchdown was last year too.
Was it last year too? Okay. Well, there's been more replays. The thing is, the overturn haven't been as many.
But every turnover is now replayed this year for the first time. Thus, you're going to get more replays.
Right, but my point was that actually the amount percentage of the amount have been replayed that have been reversed is down. So they're actually getting it right this year, percentage-wise.
Yes and no, because, again, every turnover is now reviewed. Most of those are not going to be reversed.
I see what you're saying. I see what you're saying, though, yeah.
Okay? So it's a skewed survey.
I see where you're coming from with that, though, yeah.
Right, it's a skewed survey. You know, I recovered the ball. We reviewed it. He recovered the ball. Okay, got it. You're going to get more right when you already know the outcome. It's amazing. It's like Ken Jennings on Jeopardy. I kill your mythology.
You know what? No, the problem here. I did all this work. That's not right.
But don't I have to factually say? Wait a minute. They're reviewing all turnovers now this year.
Yes. Yes, you do.
I mean, don't I factually have to say that?
Yes.
I mean, what do you want me to do? Work for the ESPN station, not know whether the ball is stuffed or inflated?
All right. I just thought it was interesting that, though, the percentage is down. I just found that interesting. I would think that the replay overturns would be higher.
You would think. I mean, take the Atlanta game the other night with Denver. You know, there's a turnover. I think it was a fumble. They looked at it. There was no overturn. But John Fox then challenged the one penalty you can overturn and won it.
Huh. I don't know, but you take all the fun out of it when you put the logic into it.
Sorry. I'd rather have people walking out of here going over to the neighborhood bar knowing what they're talking about. Matt Fortuna, ESPN.com next.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
You know, I feel bad because I feel like I messed up your childhood here.
I'd give up.
What?
I waved the white flag. Every little thought I had, you have to bring reality into it. It's like, it takes all the fun out of it.
Yeah, I know, but
I pity your kids. You must have taken all the fun out of their childhood too. Nope, didn't work that way. Sorry, son.
I want to be realistic in life.
Yeah, sometimes being realistic isn't fun.
I understand that, but you know, I mean, there's just a lot of mythology. Okay, today's show, heartily endorsed, by the way. And I want to say good afternoon to Lee because she's wonderful. It's sponsored by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services. He is the best at what he does. I have a lot of respect for Rick. Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And our phone line open at mythbusters.com, powered by Lenape Solar. Go to lenapesolar.com. Our number, by the way, 1-800-795-9565. That's 1-800-795-9565. You okay over there?
I'm great.
Awesome drop in, Kevin. Let's go to our guest. Matt Fortuna, Penn State grad, who is a blogger about Notre Dame on ESPN.com. Matt, welcome to the show. And let's get to this part here. Notre Dame's move, Matt, to the ACC. What are the benefits that you see it and the pluses from Notre Dame's point of view?
I think the first and foremost thing you look at is security when you're talking about bowl affiliations. This is a program that, for all of its strengths, and for all of its national appeal, it just really doesn't have many options for postseason play if it doesn't qualify for a PCS bowl game. They made the Champ Sports Bowl last year. That was a once-in-every-four-year deal they had with the bowl to replace the Big East team. Now they're kind of left picking up the scraps. If a Big Ten affiliated bowl can't fill a spot, if a Big 12 can't and whatnot, they got to go there. So they're kind of getting passed over in that regard. And I think having access to the ACC lineup moving forward will be great for this program.
Now, they've had, you know, in the Big East, talk about getting passed over. But again, Notre Dame's an independent. Shouldn't they be passed over in favor of a team that's actually fully invested in the conference?
Well, it's obviously a valid argument, one that many people who think Notre Dame should join a conference have pointed in their direction. They're kind of one foot in, one foot out right now with the ACC. They're going to be playing five games against ACC opponents a year, starting probably 2014. If you're a big bowl, though, I mean, you certainly want a big program like Notre Dame. Last year's, they played Florida State in the Champ Sports Bowl. It was a sellout. It was one of the higher rated bowls, one of the higher rated non-BCS bowls. And certainly, I mean, they're a program that has national appeal and is attractive to many people for a number of reasons.
All right. Now let's get to the next part of it. Notre Dame is still going to have to travel all over the place with their non-revenue sports teams. Is this package enough for them to offset the amount of money they're going to have to put out to continue to travel the way they do to Miami, Georgia, Maryland, and so forth, Boston even?
I think so. I mean, they're playing in the Big East right now with all those sports. I mean, it's not like they have it's the Big Ten where everything's within driving distance. The ACC is obviously more stable than the Big East right now. It's probably better academic and cultural fit. You have a couple of big private schools there. You have a couple of schools that can really look as public privates in the case of a North Carolina or whatnot. It's a great lacrosse league. That's where a huge sport for Notre Dame right now. It's obviously a great basketball league. Notre Dame has just extended Mike Bray for 10 years and is looking to maybe build a practice facility and invest a little bit more in that program. So I think actually when you look at it the non-revenue sports, those are probably the biggest winners, especially if you look at the uncertainty that maybe it's just facing in recent times.
Notre Dame really now has to schedule, what, just three games a year in football? Because there's, what, five ACCs, there's Stanford, there's USC, and there's Navy. So they're really down to scheduling just, what, four games a year now for football?
That sounds about right. Jack Swarbrick, athletic director, said that the deal will work in the sense that Notre Dame will essentially do their own scheduling and leave five open slots for that ACC commissioner, John Swofford, and have him plug in the opponents. Obviously, there's going to be a bit of a give and take there. You don't want a scenario where you're playing Duke and Wake Forest in the same year, or on the contrast, you're playing Virginia Tech and Florida State in the same year. But there will be some back and forth there, and Notre Dame will still have the freedom to schedule some of its rivals.
I think the biggest knock on Notre Dame over the years is that while offensively they have been brilliant at times, because it really has looked to most of us that they've taken their better talented players and put them on offense, that they haven't had the speed to deal with a lot of really good offenses with their defense. Give us an idea under Brian Kelly, Matt, how much that has changed.
You know, he reminded us this week, he says at his introductory press conference about 3 years ago, job number one for him was, you know, revitalizing this defense, recruiting the kind of playmakers you need when you face so many different offenses. You have Navy's triple option. You have USC's pro-style attack. You travel and play teams from all sorts of different conferences that are throwing all sorts of different gimmicks in everybody's way. And I think you're starting to see everything come into fruition. He's had a couple top 10 recruiting classes since he's been here. Stephon Tuitt is going to be a first-round draft pick. It could be year or two. Ishaq Williams, the outside linebacker, is just a freak of an athlete. They have great, great players all across the front seven and some young talent in the secondary. And you're finally starting to see it all come into place, fall into place for Brian Kelly.
Interesting what, you know, he's never really been satisfied with his quarterbacks. He has that little Steve Spurrier in him when it comes to satisfaction with his quarterbacks. What is he like about this kid, Goodson?
Well, yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head. He is not hesitant to pull someone out. I mean, Everett Golson is now his guy. It's the first quarterback, really, that Kelly has recruited since coming to Notre Dame. He's probably the ideal fit for a spread offense in terms of his skill set. But, I mean, hey, he threw for nearly 300 yards in his home debut 2 weeks ago, and lo and behold, Kelly yanks him out of there for the last drive of the game and puts in Tommy Rees to run the two-minute drill. So it's obviously an odd situation where you have a number two guy who's your most experienced but is not as physically up to par with your starter. And it's kind of he doesn't want to call it a starter closing deal, but it certainly seems that way so far. So it'll be interesting if they get into a tight game here against Michigan this weekend, what he does down the stretch.
Now, the next part in this is that they've been able to at least balance it out on offense. Give me an idea of the balance that they've brought to the table that's kept opposing team off balance.
They have a great offensive line. The left side returning starter, Zach Martin, left tackle, is probably going to be a pro. Braxton Cave, the center, might be as well. And they have a couple of very talented running backs. Sierra Wood is a returning 1,000-yard rusher. Theo Riddick is kind of in a hybrid role of a running back slash slot receiver. He's been all over the place. He seems to finally have found his niche out there in the backfield. George Atkinson's probably the fastest guy on the team, capable of taking it to the house. Every time he touches the ball, if he hangs on to it, he's still only a true sophomore. But they certainly have weapons around them. Again, Tyler Eifert is probably the best tight end in the country. They have everything in place, really, to help break in your quarterback of the future, if you will, and Everett Golson, who's only a redshirt freshman.
Right. Different feel going into this Michigan game than maybe in the last couple of years?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, they're 3-0 for the first time in 10 years. I mean, you talk about Notre Dame, you could say they're overhyped or whatever, and it's pretty surprising to look at a program with all those advantages and think, wow, they have not won the first three games of the season in that long, but they've done it. They got a big upset win last week at Michigan State, which I think gives them a little bit of a cushion. That was a game that, you know, not too many people thought they were going to win. They have a very tough schedule ahead. They still have trips to Norman and to L.A. to play USC. They could easily trip up against some of these bigger opponents. And I think taking care of business and even pulling out a road win last week certainly gives this team confidence and has the fan base thinking in the big picture term moving forward.
Okay, and part of this is how do you handle adversity? How do you handle success? Now they're in the mode of handling success. How is Brian Kelly, who had success, obviously, great success at a couple of different places, including Cincinnati, how's he handled that with his team since it is the first 3-0 start in 10 years?
Well, last year they had their first home night game in 21 years. It was against a USC team that ended up being pretty good, but no one really knew it at the time. They were only 4-2 going into that game. And Notre Dame was riding a four-game winning streak. They came out and they just laid an egg. They lost by 2 touchdowns. They got humbled. And they seem to have really taken a lesson from that from last season. They have another night game, obviously, this week against a big rival. Brian Kelly said he went into the locker room right after they beat Michigan State on Saturday and immediately reminded them about the bigger picture and about the task at hand this weekend. He said this week, no one's getting fitted for any championship rings just yet. I think they learned a lot from last season where they kind of said BCS, BCS, and every other public statement in here. They kind of got a slice of humble pie from last year and are kind of taking it game by game.
What about the matchup with Michigan? We've talked about the better quickness that Notre Dame now has on defense. That means you have to deal with Denard Robinson and Fitz Toussaint. What's the thought process in Notre Dame of handling the variety of things that a more mature Denard Robinson does bring to the table in combination with Toussaint?
You know, it's funny. If you look back at last season's game, for 3 quarters, they played Denard Robinson probably as good as anybody has since Denard Robinson has taken the field as a college football player. And then in the fourth quarter, it kind of all unraveled. There were a lot of 50-50 balls that ended up going Michigan's way. Notre Dame had a couple of weird turnovers, if you will. I think if they play their game this week and overcome the mental obstacle that seems to plague them whenever they play Michigan, they'll be in good hands. They're much more powerful on both the offensive and defensive line. They had no trouble running up the middle against Michigan last season. I think that'll be the case again here. They need their front seven to really contain Denard Robinson and to avoid those chunk plays. I mean, they have a very inexperienced secondary that may be tested if Robinson gets free and gets some time in the pocket. So I think it starts with the front seven.
What about the atmosphere in South Bend? What's the atmosphere of South Bend been like, considering that there's been some success, there is some hope, and it's not just the false bravado of the last dozen years?
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly some substance to it this year. 3-0 with their favorite going into this weekend against Michigan. You have a bye after that, and then your next 3 games are in Chicago, which is essentially a home game against Miami. And then you host BYU and Stanford before going to Norman on October 27th. So some of the fans, you know, it's easy for them to look ahead right now and think they could be going 7-0 into that matchup against Oklahoma. That one and the USC one, again, are the ones that everyone kind of circled as surefire losses along with Michigan State. But seeing the way, not just the fact they beat Michigan State, but the way they beat them, not using any gimmicks, kind of very soundly pounding it up the middle and making enough plays on defense, winning by double digits, I think that certainly has served as validation for what Brian Kelly's been trying to build through 3 years here. And it's certainly gotten everyone thinking big picture.
One final question, crystal ball time. You know the people there, and you and I both know, in the long history of Notre Dame, they have absolutely resisted making themselves a member of a football conference. The ACC obviously has rolled the dice that, look, if we do all of these things for them, the landscape may open the door to it. Do you see the door ever opening to it?
Yes, but not in the near future. I mean, it's so hard to tell. I mean, if you look at the conference alignment just from this time last season to where it is now, I think a lot of people were surprised. I mean, just look at the Big East adding all these teams from the Southwest and the West Coast. I think eventually, and I'm talking, you know, maybe 15 years down the line, Notre Dame's hand will be forced. But, you know, they can sleep easily now, knowing that they have a secure landing spot in the ACC, if it ever were to come to that.
Matt, thanks so much. I know you have a chat to take care of it at the top of the hour, so we appreciate the time you gave us today, and best of luck down the road to you personally.
Hey, anytime, Steve. Thanks for having me.
Matt Fortuna, ESPN.com, Notre Dame blogger, Notre Dame, Michigan, coming up Saturday night at Notre Dame Stadium in South Bend. After the top of the hour, we'll talk with Harry Donahue, the play-by-play voice of Temple football. And then after that, we're going to talk about quarterbacks in the Big Ten. Because it's my feeling, and I started talking about this yesterday, that if you want to take a quarterback and you have aspirations to go to the next level in the Big Ten, your one option is Penn State. And I'll talk about why and do it in a factual way after we talk with Harry next hour. Today's show being brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484 or visit online at rewfinancial.com. Sunbury Motors located 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf. And our Lenape Solar hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. Go to Lenape Solar and always go online to lenapesolar.com. I know, Kevin, you're getting geared up for a big Friday night.
A lot of high school football games going on. The weather sounds like it's going to be perfect. Shikellamy and Lewisburg here on WKOK. If you're a Lewisburg fan, you can catch it on 100.9 The Valley with the Lewisburg broadcast. Sealands Grove is going to be at Shamokin on Friday night. That will be a pretty big showdown and a must-win, really, for the Indians if they want to stay in the hunt for the league title. Sealands Grove coming off the big win over Shikellamy. They'll have that on Eagle 107. And then Milton will take on Mifflinburg. That will be at Mifflinburg, and you can hear that on 1380 WMLP, a game that Milton really needs to win as well. And Mifflinburg, if they want to right the ship and have a shot at the playoffs, they're going to have to really turn things around here in week four.
That's all coming up tomorrow here in the Sunbury Broadcasting family of stations. Looking forward to it. I know you get geared up for high school football. You've almost worked yourself into an emotional lather now.
Just talking about it, I'm ready to go now.
Good. Bring in Sarah. Our number, 1-800, what? 1-800-795-9565.
Sorry, she's not available.
Feel like you walked into that, didn't you?
I feel like I ran into it, and it was a brick wall.
We'll come back with more on News Radio 1070 WKOK after this. Welcome back. Bill O'Brien tonight from Damon, 605 to 7. You'll hear it right here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Today's show being brought to you by Rick Weibel at REW Insurance and Financial Services, LLC. Call 800-609-9484 or go to rewfinancial.com here in the beautiful Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia Routes 11 to 15 in Hummel's Wharf, and at 1-800-795-9565. That is our Lenape Solar hotline, powered by Lenape Solar. You can visit them online at lenapesolar.com.
By the way, I have a correction to make quickly. I had Milton and Mifflinburg. It's actually Milton taking on Central Columbia this week. I was having a flashback.
That's an outrage.
I know. I'm disappointed here.
No. No, I'm not disappointed. I'm fine. So what we're going to do in the next hour, we'll talk with Harry Donahue, the play-by-play voice of Temple football. And then I'm going to talk about why the Big Ten is not exactly the cradle of quarterbacks and why Penn State has a golden opportunity to become that, to become the place for a quarterback to want to play ball. And we're going to do this in a factual sense and in a historical sense. How about that?
Okay. I have an idea, but I'm sure it'll be wrong.
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, if I were a young high school player thinking I ever wanted to be a quarterback in the NFL, I would want to go where a coach that developed a pretty good NFL quarterback was in an offense or was running not only the offense but running the team.
Right. And look, let's take Nebraska, Michigan, Ohio State. Taylor Martinez, Denard Robinson, Braxton Miller. They are in systems right now that are the systems that are needed to take advantage of their talents and help their teams win. Not one of the three will be playing football on Sundays as a quarterback. In fact, they may not even let him run an end around in an option play and throw it because the three of them can't on that level. They are marvelous college quarterbacks. They are marvelous college quarterbacks that can win games in their current system. But if I have the ball on the 10-yard line, I have 90 yards in front of me, I have 50 seconds left, and I have no timeouts, Matt McGloin would be my choice over any one of those three guys. Part of its system, part of its him. I've watched now Matt McGloin run an offense like 2 years ago in the waning seconds, and hit Brett Brackett for a touchdown with 7 seconds to go. I watched him against Virginia with the money on the table drive his team from the 27 to the opponent's 20 and then eventually a kneel down back to the 25 with one timeout to work with and a minute and 18 seconds. Because of the way Robinson, Martinez, and Miller play, I'm sorry, no timeouts left. And don't throw the ball well enough and don't have a system that allows you to throw the ball well enough. Not going to happen. And these systems are part of the reason why the Big Ten has fallen way behind in the NFL.